thank you for gathering for this week's episode of Friends with Friends. My name's Pete Allison, and I'll now hand over to Dave Cribb.
Ahoy, hoy. It's come to my attention that a number of you pointed out that the title of last week's episode, both on Patreon and on main release, was...
Main release?
Was, don't interrupt the official statement, Pete.
What am I? That's a manual release. That's what that's like.
Was incorrectly titled the one with the birthday video instead of the one with the birthing video. This was a test. And if you message us, you have indeed passed the test. You are now welcomed into the higher category of sub-editor title people for the
Diligent Listeners
podcast. It is in no way suitable to assume that I didn't double check the title and that perhaps the word birthing got auto corrected to birthday. And then I released that on Patreon, and still 24 hours later, even though people had already pointed it out, assumed I hadn't made the same mistake with the main release episode, and so didn't bother to double check, and then saw that that indeed had happened again. And I got a barrage of messages, both on the Friends with Friends accounts and to my personal telephone. And then I just thought, by that time, Pete, it's not fucking any point in changing it, is it? It'll live forever. It'll live forever as it is.
As a machine.
Here ends my official statement. Congratulations on passing the test.
And on that note, he resigned. So from now on, it's just me and a few seagulls for company.
Yeah, if you think you can replace me with a flock of seagulls, heck up.
Did you hear about that owl in New York?
Is this a joke?
No.
All right, sounds like set up to a joke.
No, there's that owl that escaped from the zoo in Central Park.
Oh, no, haven't. No, go
and
on.
It's called Flacco. Right. And it's like this owl that people on the upper northwest side were used to hearing because it was supposed to be in a zoo, but then it escaped and it just like flew around New York, but then it died because it flew into a building.
Oh, no, that's so sad.
Yeah. That's the end of the story. Sad.
It's like a brief moment of freedom.
Mm. There was like a Twitter account that like followed updates of where you could hear it hooting, but then one day,
oh my god, it's got its own Wikipedia page now.
Yeah,
Flacco brackets owl.
It's a good looking owl.
Good fucking owl.
A handsome owl.
Handsome owl.
Although now he is dead.
Well, this episode will be dedicated to the memory of Flacco the Owl.
Don't you think he should be called Falco?
The Falcon.
Well, I just feel like that's a better name for an owl.
Yeah. I think there are much better names for an owl than Flacco, to be
honest. Like what, Dave? What would you name an owl?
Well, you can't put me on the spot now, can you? Tessa Owl.
Is that a reference to Tessa Chow? I think with all due respect to Tessa Chow, quite a niche political reference that is.
Yeah, well, you put me on the spot and I came up with that. What I suggest is not a terrible one for my first go off the top of my head, all right?
Okay.
Irritable owl syndrome.
Yes.
Professional owl.
Professional owl?
You might get sent off for a professional owl.
Oh, like in football, professional foul. Okay. Okay, well,
Hey, Pete, do you want a shower? Because I could get you a bath owl to dry yourself with.
Actually, Dave, I think it's too soon to be joking about owls after Flacco's...
Flacco's untimely death. I'm sorry, sorry. Please do.
Don't you think if you're an owl and if you're any bird and you fly into a building, you're not a very good bird?
Are you saying Flacco deserved to die because he was a shit owl?
No, because I can understand in Flacco's case, like in New York, and he wasn't supposed to be free in New York.
Yes.
Although I'm sure on the days that he didn't fly into buildings, he did enjoy himself.
No, for sure.
But I just think that birds flying into buildings.
I always think you've got to be going at quite a
bit
speed
of natural selection
to terminally fly yourself into a building as well. Though, do you know what I mean?
Well, like, it's like if we walked into a wall. So
no, but you've probably like walked into a wall or something, you know? And you're like going, oh, that's annoying. Should have seen that wall.
Yeah.
Or like my friend Gareth, who, and this is testament, I think, to the state that I keep my house in, with quite some vigour, walked straight into the glass door, patio door of my back terrace.
Right.
Because he thought it was open, and it very much wasn't open, and left a full facial imprint on the glass. And still didn't die, Pete, like the owl.
Do you think Flacco was on his phone when he flew into the
Exactly, building? Exactly. Just he was probably catching up on some...
Some tweets.
Some tweets. Yeah, I know, but it doesn't work anymore because some X's. Oh, you've ruined everything, Elon Musk. Even owl-based jokes.
Well, I think that's enough owl chat.
Yes, enough owl chat. I've got some quick parish notices before we start on Friends.
Oh,
is that okay?
Yeah.
I'd like to shout out to Fwuff listener Claire, who came to my piano bar on Saturday night and said hello and said she was a big fan of the podcast. And so I thought
did
I'd say
she
hello
request
on the podcast.
A song?
A song? Oh, at the bar. I thought you meant for here. No, she has previously requested an episode, Peter. She may have requested a song. I don't know. I don't keep tabs on that all night, frankly. I wasn't playing the piano at the time, so I wouldn't know for sure. And then secondly, another listener of the podcast and also my good friend Karen, who has just opened a West End show, Peter, and I went to see her in it this week, and it was excellent. So I'm giving an official Friends with Friends endorsement to... And I say it's an endorsement. It has already won the Olivier Award for Best Musical. So in many ways,
but
that
now
is a better
your view
endorsement.
Is the breakthrough it needs. Yeah.
But Standing at the Sky's Edge was a wonderful way to spend an evening. And I was very proud to watch my friend Karen on stage. And I know that she is a regular listener to the podcast, albeit sometimes a couple of weeks behind. So it'd be interesting to see when she hears this.
Okay.
Because I'm sure I'll get a text. Anyway, there you go. If you're looking for a show to see, would heartily endorse. It's the music of Richard Hawley, and it's an excellent story set in Sheffield. And it's dead nice.
A lot of things are set in Sheffield, aren't they?
Aren't they, though? A lot of stuff. Name five.
Talking about Jamie.
Everybody's talking about Jamie. Yeah, a lot of musicals. Yeah, you're quite right. More musical. Like, it's got a high percentage of musicals set there.
I mean, I've named those two, and now I'm struggling.
Yeah, that's fine. That is more than I could name that's set in, like... Norwich, though, you know, once you pass Partridge, there's not much there, is there?
No, that's true.
But there you go. Anyway, I would say it's nothing like the Full Monty, but it is set in Sheffield, so that's all I can give you. Anyway, parish notices ended. Shall we talk about Friends, Peter?
Yeah, go on.
Feels like the thing to do, doesn't it, in this sort of setting, and this setting being a Friends podcast. This week's episode request comes from Mary, who says, "Hi, Dave and Pete. Firstly, of course I love the podcast." Well, that feels like a sort of afterthought, doesn't it, Pete? Like you're just saying that because she
feels
like she
has to. Well, it's very much her first thought.
Well, that's true, actually, a pre-thought. Well, thank you anyway. We appreciate that. I listen while I get ready for work and in the car. One morning, my 9-year-old came in and said, "Mom, what are you listening to?" All I heard was the words "ugly naked guy." Yep, that is fair. That is valid. Apologies to your 9-year-old, Mary, who, by virtue of how long these requests sometimes take to come through, has probably just celebrated their 15th birthday.
Yeah, probably.
And that's very much on us. I'd like to request the one where Nana dies twice. Ross has some great physical comedy plus some really good Jack Geller moments. Agreed. I love the scene where Judy, Aunt, and Ross are looking for something for Nana to wear. It reminds me of when my grandma died. My aunts literally had the same conversation of whatever we pick, she would have told us it's the wrong one. I also love that Joey is watching the game at the funeral. Years ago, my husband bought a radio to my friend's wedding to listen to a football game. Throughout the reception, guys were coming up to him asking the score, and he felt like a hero. Jack's outburst, also hilarious, where he yells, "Now I'm depressed." And lastly, one of my favourite scenes in all of Friends is the end where Ross is all drugged up and he tells Rachel, "Oh, you don't get it." Classic Ross. Thanks for taking my request. Mary in Ohio.
Off of the US.
Off of the US. Further afield than we had last week, which was very much England, I think. Thanks, Mary, and thank you for your request. And honestly, I think I said this last week, can't believe we haven't bloody done this episode yet. This is a real classic, really, in many ways, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's very early on in Friends, yeah. isn't it? The eighth episode ever. Yeah. And I think, therefore, it like, tone-wise, it's far more kind of sentimental than I think Friends is usually in the rest of the...
Yeah, I think they're playing around with a lot of ideas still, aren't they, in this early? There's like a few shots and a few tonal bits, like you say, and a few character developments that aren't quite there yet, and there's quite a lot of stuff that definitely changes as it goes on. But it feels like they are, you're right, trying to hit. There's like two or three points where they put that like sentimental music in, isn't there?
Yeah.
And it's like, and we're having an emotional moment. And sure, I mean, it is about their grandma dying, to be fair, but still, it's like a grandma that we've never met, and it's not like a big death of a character in a show, you know?
No, it's difficult to feel too much loss.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, not for Ross and Monica, maybe, but for us, the...
Oh, of course. I wasn't saying that they shouldn't grieve for their grandmother, Dave.
And on that note of we've never met her, and it's the funeral of a character who's sort of related to two of the characters, we've got that classic Friends thing where inexplicably all six of them are invited to the funeral of a woman that I presume at least half of them have never met.
Yeah.
But it is a good setting for a sitcom episode, Peter, so we'll roll with it.
That's true.
Here's your synopsis. Season 1, Episode 8, the one where Nana dies twice. Oh, you're nearly going to love this production code, Pete, and then you're going to hate it.
Nearly.
You ready?
Yeah.
4, 5... You're going to go on a journey here. 4, 5, 6, 6, 5, 7.
Ah, the 7 killed it.
Really killed it, didn't it? Really killed it. 21.1 million people watched this episode, Pete.
It's a whopper.
In America alone. That's a lot of people, isn't it? Ross and Monica rush to the hospital when their parents tell them their elderly maternal grandmother has been taken ill. After she passes, they go in to say the goodbyes, but Ross and Monica are shocked when their dead grandmother momentarily revives before dying again. They attend Nana's funeral, where Monica subtly confronts her mother about constantly critical attitude. Ross falls into an open grave, hurts his back, becomes loopy. Ooh, you don't hear the word loopy often, do you?
You don't, do you?
On muscle relaxers. Meanwhile, Joey, Jack, and the other men at the funeral end up listening to a Giants football game. Watching, I think. Wasn't it watching?
Watching, yeah. They've got a portable telly.
Meanwhile, Chandler's astounded when a work friend tries to fix him up with a male colleague and wants to find out why most of his co-workers and other friends initially think he's gay when meeting. Where do you want to start, Pete? Gay or funeral? Classic combo. Classic choice.
I think we should start with gay.
Oh, you would say that, wouldn't you?
Do you know what, though? Like, watching this, I was sort of sat waiting for the Chandler gay conversation to be problematic, but it isn't really, so that's nice. The thing I don't really get about this storyline is I don't really get what the point is. Like, there's this speculation around, like, what makes some people assume that Chandler is gay.
Hmm.
But then it doesn't really, like, conclude with anything. Like, he just ends up kind of embracing it a little bit, and there's a bit of a joke in the fact that he does actually have an idea of what kind of man he'd want to go for and that kind of thing. But it doesn't really come to a conclusion. It's just this, some people think Chandler's gay, full stop.
Yeah, which does become a bit of a runner. There are sort of a few callbacks to it throughout the series, aren't there, at various points. But yeah, you're quite right. I mean, is the point of it maybe that they're trying to like slightly gently nudge people towards the idea it wouldn't be so bad if Chandler was gay, because he sort of comes round to it and starts discussing men who he thinks other people think are out of his league, and he isn't out of his league. You know, don't forget this is like 1994. Do you think it was as simple as them going, let's show Chandler realizing it wouldn't be terrible if people thought he was gay?
I would even make the case that Friends therefore goes backwards in its representation of gay people, because from this point on, like in later episodes, the gay characters are very stereotypically gay,
right?
Like extremely camp. I'm thinking a lot of waiters and that sort of thing, or
yes,
or the person that works for Chandler's family,
yeah.
Like when actually, the first gay character that we see is the person that works with Chandler.
Lol.
And him. And he isn't that. Like, he isn't that kind of stereotype.
Yeah. He's presented in the same way as a straight man might be in the sitcom at the time.
Yeah.
You know, he's just sort of like a guy that sort of deals with Chandler's slightly overt homophobia by sort of going... basically going, we don't really want you anyway, type thing.
Yeah.
But he is. Like, Lowell seems like the guy you'd actually want to be, like, hanging out with if you were Chandler. Like, we don't know much about Brian. Is Brian loads hotter than Lowell, Pete?
Not massively, I don't think.
No, I know. It's hard to tell without personality, really, isn't it? But to me, I'd put Lowell over Brian, frankly, if we're ranking them. But that's probably not the point of the plot line, is it?
No, I don't think it is.
What I would say is Chandler is too offended, right? He is too offended by and too worried about it. But also Shelley probably should have maybe just asked before definitely going ahead and setting him up with a guy. Like, she was so certain he was gay, she didn't even bother to sort of double check, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Also, did you notice that in the staff room, there is a sign
yes.
in the staff room saying, please go to someone's retirement party because they have no friends.
They have no friends. I know. It was sad, wasn't it?
And it's still there when they come back to this same location a little bit later on in the episode.
I can't remember the name of the person, and that's almost certainly going to turn up in the quiz if we have a quiz, which I can't remember if we do. And don't spoil it for me. No spoilers. Oh,
okay.
No spoilers. We all know the Jeopardy that we like in that bit of the quiz, that bit of the podcast. But yeah, anyway, most of this plot is just Chandler sort of slightly wounded that people think he's gay, isn't it? Sort of moping around, roping. Frankly, he should just be taking it as a compliment and moving on.
Yeah, but yeah, this is what I mean. It just doesn't go anywhere from there.
No, nothing happens.
There's no conclusion to it.
No, no. And the bit where... like, again, he seems sort of almost wounded to the point where he doesn't argue back against it when Ross, off his tits, says, oh, you want to be gay? And Chandler's literally flirting with a woman who then goes, oh, he's gay. And he doesn't even go, oh, I'm not, by the way. That's just a thing. He just goes, well, I guess this is going to ruin the rest of my life. Bit odd, isn't it? Is this the first time TV introduced the idea of a gaydar to the mainstream population?
I like that he calls it a radar, though, doesn't he? Like, we have a sort of radar,
I mean, like,
for these things.
Almost before they'd even sort of done the pun, you know?
Coined the phrase, yeah.
Yeah, coined the phrase. That he sort of goes, we have a sort of radar, as if that's this completely alien concept. I mean, he might just be implying that straight people don't know about it. But again, I would say that is, you know, something that everybody's very aware of now. Like the idea of a gaydar. But it does feel like they sort of they're bringing it to TV for the first time, you know?
Did you know, Dave, that prior to Grindr, there was like a website-based version of it called Gaydar?
Do you know what? That rings a bell now that you say that. I think I did know that. Were you on Gaydar?
I was. I think the first ever date I went on was with someone from Gaydar.
I mean, ironically, Gaydar in that iteration is the only place you don't need to have a good gaydar.
It's true, yeah. Yeah, you terrible, could safely assume.
Yeah. What a terrible name for a website.
Yeah. I assume it doesn't exist anymore because it's sort of been rendered pointless.
Yes. Well, exactly. Maybe they realise.
Oh, no, it does exist. It's now a dating site.
Again, I still think terrible brand name for what is, by default, a gaydar in itself before it even, you know, as we've said. Rethink your name,
chat
guys.
Chat with and date like-minded guys now.
Right now. Well, that is what Grindr is really, isn't it? And right now is even more now for Grindr.
There you go.
Wrapping up the gay storyline, shall we?
Yes.
Do you think Chandler's got gay hair? Just to finish?
No, I don't think he has, actually.
No, he just got 90s
maybe he
hair.
Did, maybe he did in... Yeah, he just has 90s hair, doesn't he?
Yeah, is 90s hair gay hair, Pete? That's the big question. That's my big thought. I forget about my big thought every week.
Well, no, that's a good one.
Is 90s hair just gay? We'll be debating that on our spin-off episode, Friends, Fashion, and Me.
Which Gaydar starts... with friends.
Yeah.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Judy's a right bitch in season one, isn't she?
She is, yeah. She's just not very nice at all, is she?
Like, I know she definitely softens as the show goes on, and she's always got those traits of being a bit of a critical mother, but in this episode particularly, she's fucking awful, isn't she?
Just she isn't really very funny. Like there's no humor to her. No, either. She's just quite exactly. Sort of harsh.
And it's interesting because they nail Jack Geller first time out of the block. Is this the first Jack and Judy? The one with the sonogram at the end. They're in that one, aren't they? Episode two. But this is like the first sort of deep dive into them, isn't it? And I'd say Jack, that character barely changes for 10 years. Like he's ridiculous and funny but caring, and Judy's they haven't nailed it here at all, because I think they try and soften it at the end, like you say, they try and do that thing, that poignancy thing again with Judy where she talks about the earrings at the end and it's like, oh, she does have a soft side, and I just think she hasn't pulled it back far enough for me to like her at that point. I'm just like, she's still a absolute prick.
Yeah, and also there's that bit where Monica sort of says, if you had the opportunity, would you tell your mum?
Yeah.
And it, like, the fact that she says no is like, it's very, no, I'm not going to address this daughter with legitimate issue with my parenting. I'm just going to shut it down.
Yeah, because she can't be that unself-aware, surely. Do you think she's that unself-aware that she genuinely doesn't realise she's doing it? Maybe she is. She's either really, really unself-aware or, like you say, not doing her parental duties quite right, is she? So they get this sort of call, a little mention of Paolo, just randomly, he's on the phone, but that's very much usurped by Nana dying. They get the call, they go to hospital, they're all having sort of chats about things like sweet and lows, which frankly never knew what that was, first watching the episode.
Are they sweetness?
Yeah.
Low-calorie sweetness.
I guess low-calorie sweetness must have just been such a big thing in America before they were here.
Well, she has so many, doesn't she? They've tumbled down over Ross.
Yeah, I mean, they can't be that expensive just to buy, frankly, right?
No.
Guess how many sweet and low packets have been produced to this date?
Whatever.
Yeah.
Well, there's about a million in her cupboard. So
exactly, right?
I'd say 1.2 billion.
Pete, you're so out. Over 500 billion.
What?
Packets have been produced.
Wow.
Isn't that insane?
I thought I was going to be way over there.
No, that's why I flagged it, because it just felt like a stat that was remarkable, frankly.
By the way, and you know, in the request for this episode, there was a reference to aunt.
Mm.
Do we ever see this aunt again? Or does she get a name, or is she literally just aunt?
I'm not sure if she gets a name. One second.
Because we do meet a few members of the wider Geller family at times, but I don't think we see much more of her, do we?
Her name on the official credits list is Aunt Lillian.
Hmm.
Aunt Lillian appears in exactly one episode and is never seen again. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
She is Judy Geller's sister.
Well, I assume that much.
She's sort of a slightly calming influence amidst the Judy Geller madness, isn't she? Like, I think she She's like the aunt that seems to get it a bit more with Ross and Monica. You know, when they're trying to pick the dress and Ross is like getting exasperated by Judy. She's like, oh, she's going to tell us it's the wrong one, whatever. Let's just crack on with it. So there's probably a space for Aunt Lillian in their lives. But clearly they did not trust the acting stylings of Eleanor Donoghue.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Eleanor Donoghue, who was in the film Pretty Woman.
Was she? What an early 90s CV she has.
Right. Sunset, 77 Sunset Strip in 1963. A lot of her credits are much earlier, actually. She's best known for playing Betty Anderson in the 1950s sitcom Father Knows Best.
1950s sitcom?
Yeah.
Wow.
Right. So there you go. That's Aunt Lillian's CV for you. The bit, again, talking of the strange, slightly strange sentimental bits, the bit where they first announce that Nana's died and they all four stand up together slowly is just really weird, isn't it?
Well, the one thing, and who am I to question the fictionalized grieving process of the Geller family? But I do find it odd that she's dying in a hospital room.
Yeah.
But all four of them are sat outside room with the door closed. It's like, we won't be with it. Just give us a shout when she's gone.
It is something that I never really thought about at all when I first watched this. But why? Why wouldn't they just be around the bed?
Well, the reason they're there is very much happening on the other side of a closed door.
With, let's be honest, a very questionably qualified medical team.
Yeah.
Who can't tell when a human has died. So I'd be a bit worried all the way through this. Frankly, Ross and Monica should have known better because Nana is in fact breathing when they are talking to her and she's supposed to be dead. Like, I could see that she was breathing. And I know obviously the actor is still alive, so that's never a telltale sign. It might just be a blooper, but it's not a goof in this case. She is breathing and she's still alive.
Were you with her when she died? No, we were sat outside on a group of chairs.
The chairs in the waiting area were very comfortable, though. Yeah, very odd, isn't it? Very odd. I think one of the funniest lines of the whole episode is Jack Geller's, "She may have died. We're looking into it."
Yeah, that is good.
Which makes me laugh. It's like his delivery of all his things. Again, like I say, I think they nailed his character immediately. We have that whole scene where he's doing the buried at sea. That's just like a classic, great Jack Geller scene that could have been from any season of Friends. And actually one of those things that stays with me, Buried at Sea, I don't have very many reference points for Buried at Sea, Pete, so if I ever hear the phrase Buried at Sea, my immediate thought is Buried at Sea, huh? Like, that's one of the things.
If you're just buried at sea,
yeah, does that mean you just lolloped over the side of a
boat? I was going to say, like, I've heard of ashes being scattered at sea, but if you're buried at sea, is that just, yeah, tipped over the side? Or does buried at sea mean ashes?
I don't know. Let's find out. It's regularly performed by navies.
Quite morbid, this.
The ceremony may include burial in a casket, burial sewn in sailcloth, burial in an urn, or scattering the cremated remains from a ship. So it's all-encompassing, Pete.
Right, okay.
All-encompassing. You do need, however, a license from the Marine Management Organization to be buried in sea, in English waters or offshore Northern Ireland.
Right.
So there you go. Tell you what, though, something I didn't expect. Co-op.co.uk has a option for burial at sea.
Well, they have a range of funeral options, don't they?
They do. I just didn't know sea was one of them.
Right. There you go.
There are only three designated locations around the English coast where burials at sea can take place using the self-service license. They are, Pete, I know you're ready for it, in at 3, New Haven in East Sussex. In at 2, the Needle Spoil Ground near the Isle of Wight. And coming in at number 1, Tynmouth in Tyne and Wear.
Oh,
there are also
okay.
two designated areas in Scotland, off John O'Groats and off Oban West Coast.
Oh, off John O'Groats, very high up there, aren't you?
Very high. You got to travel a long way with your coffin there, haven't you?
Yeah. I don't think I'd want to be buried at sea.
Better than being buried in the ground from a what-if-I'm-not-dead point of view, I'd guess.
Yes, that's true.
If you just lolloped over, you might just float, and then you'd be like, oh, I'm still in the sea. But that might be bad.
Yeah, but you'd also be off the coast of John O'Groats, so...
It's a long way back, isn't it? As this article has said, you'd probably be in a coffin, so actually that'd be terrifying.
Good. Well, that's a terrifying thought.
But it does bring us back to Friends, because the idea that you might not be quite dead is, my question is, to the doctors listening, is there a genuine medical scenario where it might appear to highly qualified medical professionals that someone is definitely dead, dead enough to tell their closest family, albeit family that didn't want to be in the room at their last moments, that they've definitely died? Or is this just like a silly sitcom scenario? Like,
well, the thing I don't get is that she has a heart monitor, right? Because when she actually dies, it goes
beep. It goes beep, beep, beep again. Yeah, exactly.
So what was it doing to make the nurse think that she died the first time?
Exactly. What possibly could have made those people? And surely you need like a second opinion for the old death. It can't just be one medical person going, yeah, probably dead. I'll just go and tell the family. Like, I feel like they have to call it. Like, isn't that a thing?
You declare it, don't you?
But it has to be like...
I declare death.
Is that Michael Scott declaring death?
It was a little bit.
Yeah, good. Enjoyed that. This brings me on to the second thing that I thought about as quite a weird scenario, and definitely one that a lot of people have had to do, but just dressing a dead person's weird, isn't it?
It is. Picking an outfit.
Picking an outfit and dressing them, like... If you think about what you really have to do to dress somebody completely without any autonomy, it's fucking
odd. Like, at the risk of this, I mean, it's hard for this episode of Friends of Friends not to be a bit morbid given the subject matter.
A bit deathy.
But I think the one thing it does do is illustrate how when you go through that process of, like, if you're unfortunate enough to lose someone, then suddenly things become so, like, procedural, and you have these quite mundane tasks, like clearing through their stuff, like picking out clothes, and you almost don't get time to, like, think about the person, like, until much further down the line, because you've just got all this stuff to do. And that's very much what this episode is. It's all the stuff that they have to get through in the immediate aftermath. And
it's
I
just
think
so much admin, isn't it?
Yeah, it's quite reflective of real life in that respect.
No, I do agree. It is a nice portrayal of it, and you do get the impression that it's sort of exactly how everyone in that scenario would deal with the death, from Phoebe accidentally going, what a great day, because she's sort of not that close to the woman, but she's just enjoying walking outside in the sun, and then having to sort of go weather-wise. And then Joey, you know, and Jack Geller, frankly, the father-in-law type scenario, watching watching the game rather than, you know, particularly worrying about someone who clearly he wasn't that close to. I guess this isn't really a problem anymore with mobile phones, isn't it? But I do recall watching a football match at a wedding once.
Do you?
But, like, again, sort of just under the table a bit, accident every now and then, you know, checking in. I wasn't sort of stood in the corner for the whole game, you know?
Do you remember what game it was?
No, I don't, actually. No.
Actually, I remember on the day of my granddad's funeral, England playing Wales in the Euros in probably, when was that?
There you go. Yeah.
2016? I wasn't watching it at the funeral, but I remember
You weren't? No.
I do remember checking my phone at the wake to see what the score was, but I think that's allowed.
I was once at the wedding of a Sky Sports football reporter who was getting married on the day of a big sports game. I think it might have been the Six Nations or something. And there was like a dedicated TV set up downstairs.
I think you've got to embrace it if that sort of thing happens.
Just to go and watch the rugby. I think it might have been the Six Nations. I can't remember. But yeah, you have to just go for it, don't you? Although it is one of the only times we really see how much all those characters care about football.
True.
It's not like they're constantly checking scores all the time, you know? You'd have think someone would have warned Ross about the massive hole in the ground, wouldn't you?
Yes, it looks like an insurance claim waiting to happen.
Feels like something you should be aware of in a cemetery. Although you don't see as many open graves as I think TV and movies would like you to believe, you know?
Remember open graves? Whatever happened to them?
You just put one foot in them, don't you?
Yes, you do.
But yeah, it's quite far down, as would be the case. But
quite far down.
Yeah. 6 feet under, famously.
Famously.
But I feel like Ross would be more injured than he is, frankly, having fallen that far.
Break an ankle, at least. Well, actually, you say that, he does require quite heavy painkillers because he ends up absolutely off his tits.
Yeah, I mean, it does. The amount of painkillers, the level of painkillers he seems to have taken does not seem to equate with how okay he is when he's just lying on the floor with a bit of spasm in his muscle. And also, lol, that the only medical opinion on site is Phoebe's.
Yeah, who I think would take a very sort of...
holistic approach.
Yes, that.
She seems to be doing the proper work of a paramedic. And it's worth pointing out at this point, Pete, that Phoebe has not been revealed as a masseuse in Friends. So it's just...
Yeah, true.
From the point of view of the first time watching audience, a woman giving a medical opinion. If it's that bad, you'd get a proper... You'd get a proper medical professional in. Although, having said that, the medical professionals in this episode have not done themselves proud so far.
True.
So, if you don't tell the person's dead, how are you going to tell whether Ross's muscles in spasm or not? Anyway, like you say, Ross gets off his tits on painkillers, goes around causing havoc, and then there's that scene that Mary refers to where he... sort of goes, I love you. Well, do you know who I love the most? You. And he goes, I don't get it. And then promptly falls asleep all over for what seems like a number of hours.
I just, whatever painkillers he's taking should not have been made so freely available to him. Yeah, he is.
No, I know. Judy's being liberal there. Yeah, I've never had painkillers that strong that would affect you that much, I don't think.
You know, like those, like TikToks of when people get given painkillers after dental surgery and they go a bit mad. I love that. Yes. I love that shit.
Yeah, it's good. That is good viewing, isn't it? It's always funny to watch someone on painkillers. And Ross proves that.
Unless
is
they're
the case.
In pain.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, hopefully they're still not in pain after taking their painkillers, Pete. That's the whole point of them, isn't it?
True.
Hey, Pete, do we have a quiz?
Well, Dave... I think we've ended up with quiz eye.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because...
Talk me through the process?
Should we just do the quizzes as and when I find them?
Sure. How many are there?
So Mary's definitely sent one.
Okay, great. That's the main
which
point, isn't it?
I have. So here we go. Are you ready for Mary's quiz?
Mary send a quiz this week?
No.
Right. You just didn't find it till this week.
Correct.
Fine.
Is that true? Yes.
You sent me a message earlier in the week, sort of going, oh, we do have a quiz now.
Yeah, and
or
then
something.
Didn't I say stand? Yeah, I stood you down, didn't I?
Yes, you did. Yeah.
Yeah, fine.
And frankly, I hadn't done anything about it by that time.
Well,
so
no,
that was excellent.
I assumed that would be the case. so it says, the one when Anna dies twice. Quiz, and then under it says by Mary from the US state of Ohio.
Absolutely love that, big fan.
And then it says the date the quiz was created, and then it says quiz was created as well. Created April 1st, 2023. Or was it? It was.
April 1st joke.
Question one: what is the name of Chandler's co-worker who thinks he's gay?
Shelley.
Correct. Question two, what event is posted on the dry erase board behind said co-worker?
Someone's retirement. Is it Frank's?
It's Chuck, isn't it?
Chuck, I don't know. You tell me.
Retirement party for Chuck Fowler.
Chuck Fowler.
Brother of Robbie.
Please come, he has no friends.
Bonus question, what is the date of the event?
No idea. 22nd of November.
Yes. Bonus question two.
How did you not? I want a better reaction for remembering that.
Well, and also, but hang on, complete the set. Bonus question two, what does the rest of the message say under the date?
Please come, he has no friends.
Correct. Impressive.
It's pretty good, isn't it?
Question three, what did Chuck...
You still haven't been amazed that I remember the date exactly, and I couldn't remember Chuck's name.
What do you want me to do?
Just be ask me how I remembered the date so well.
How did you remember the date?
Because it's the day it's the day that JFK gets assassinated. And
just
I remember
in case
looking
there wasn't
at
enough
it.
Death.
God, this episode's full of death.
Question three.
Yeah.
What did Chandler spend Phoebe's birthday party doing?
Looking at Rachel's boobs.
Is correct. Yeah. Question four. Ross finds his what in Nana's closet?
Retainer.
Correct. And in what year was the photo at Java Joe's taken?
Oh, me and the gang at Java Joe's, 1952.
No, even earlier. It's 39.
Yeah, I literally couldn't think.
Lydia has sent a... has sent a quiz.
When?
But I don't have access to this file. Okay, Lydia sent a quiz. Wait, when was the 90? Oh, it was a week ago. I think it was for last week.
Oh, was it?
So, Lydia, thanks for the bonus quiz that you sent for last week's episode, but I've just realised that I can't open it.
Can you request access to it now? And then we'll do it on next week's episode, so it's even more out of date as a bonus segment.
Your request for
access. Well, that's something to look forward to, Pete. But if people aren't immediately drawn back in by the idea of a quiz from 2 weeks ago, what episode is next week?
Next week. And we do have a quiz.
Good.
It's season 3, episode 4. The one with the metaphorical tunnel.
Oh, lovely, lovely. Bye.